and welcome to Press X to Science, the podcast where Bioshock Infinite meets Bryce DeWitt. My name is Tim Young, and in today's episode, we'll be parting the veil and peer into the other side as we immerse ourselves in alternate reality games. Before we start, however, let me introduce our regular co-hosts. First up is science communicator and games-based learning advocate, Megan Pusey. Hello, Megan.
Hi.
And joining us is industrial scientist and game developer, Phil English. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Tim.
Today's topic is alternate reality games, or ARGs, not to be confused with augmented reality games, which is another somewhat similar but also very, very different thing. ARGs are a very interesting phenomenon that sort of started at the turn of the century, and it weirds me out that we can even say that, It comes out at the turn of the century. Yep.
2000 was a long time ago.
Yeah, it really is. But the first and earliest of these games were coming in at about 1999 to 2001. So it's, I think, an interesting byproduct of the slow but inexorable march of technology and progress as we have sort of changed the way we communicate with ourselves, and especially as the internet started to reach, I guess, what people started to call at that point Web 2.0.
Mm. Oh, so, even before Web 2.0 a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, technically before as well, because not all, I mean, ARGs don't necessarily rely on the internet, but certainly that sense of global and quick communication has accelerated and made a lot of what they do a lot easier. So before we start, let's probably define exactly what makes an alternate reality game. There are lots of very, very different theories and a lot of very heated arguments and debates as to what constitutes an alternate reality game. But some of the very heavily agreed upon terms are that, one, it's a game that crosses multiple types of media, so multiple platforms. It won't just exist necessarily on the internet, and even if it is 100% on the internet, you won't just find it in web pages or in a downloadable application. It usually works its way into lots of different mediums. Another very important part of an alternate reality game is that it doesn't actually acknowledge that it is a game, and this is where the alternate reality part of it comes in. So this concept of this is not a game, or TNIAG, or TNAG, I guess you would pronounce it.
Terrible initialism or acronym.
It's not great.
Yeah.
But this, the game never essentially says that it's a game. Publishers are not acknowledged or shouldn't be acknowledged in any parts of the game. And this also leads into the concept of the puppet master and the curtain. So the puppet master or puppet masters are people who run the game, or at least facilitate its progress. So they're people who are pretending to be characters. They don't actually acknowledge that they are running the game. They play characters within the game. And the curtain is the other half of that. So the curtain is what divides the regular people, the players, from the puppet masters.
Yeah, so there's a really... It's essentially... So in terms of gaming, there's not really much like it in terms of, like, you know, stuff like Dungeons and Dragons and those kind of tabletop RPGs certainly do touch on this kind of interesting interaction between people, where you kind of have this knowledge that you're not, that you are playing a game, but you're both so committed to the game that you kind of fall into that setting and that, you know, that world quite heavily. And
yeah,
to have,
there's a very heavy suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, yeah. And to have a person on the other side of that thing who has set this whole thing up, or people that have set this whole thing up, and know it all, like have it all in their heads, and can kind of, I don't know, manipulate in a flavorful way how players are interacting with them is really unique. And it's not something that you can necessarily get from just a regular video game. Like, it's pretty much impossible to design, and they've tried, the like self-sustaining ARGs have been attempted, but none of them have really caught on too much. So it's a very human to human commitment to a fantasy, or, you know, to an unreal world. It's a really unique style of play, I think.
But like, it kind of, a lot of them have been tapping into fan worlds that fans are really into and willing to sort of dive into and pretend or suspend their belief that this is kind of real. And some of the games or ARGs are linked to existing fantasy, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of the ARGs that have been out recently are really just elaborate guerrilla marketing campaigns.
Yeah, and I think, but even some of the earlier ones, that's how they started as well.
Mm.
Yeah, but I think that's also doing them a disservice, because this isn't just a marketing campaign. The amount of work and the amount of, I guess, joy that the player gets from one of these ARGs is far in excess of just a marketing campaign.
And it's definitely not a cheap way to market to people either.
Oh, lordy, no.
I don't know about that, because I would have thought that, you know, compared to, say, I don't know, a 30-second ad slot that you run every day at a particular, you know, at a prime time on a TV, you know, network, it probably is pretty cheap to just employ like 8 people, you know, for you know, I don't know, 3 to 6
That's
months
probably
to
quite
develop
true.
It. Yeah, I don't know.
Because I guess I'm thinking of, you know, the amount of content and work that goes into creating it is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's not cheap in terms of, like, there's a lot of work that goes
people
into
hours,
these things. Yeah.
But you're right. Advertising on TV does cost lots of money. So yeah,
what we're really doing is just exposing the ridiculously inflated cost of advertising.
Yeah.
So, one of the earliest ARGs that people might be familiar with was the I Heart Bees or I Love Bees ARG that came around to market the release of Halo 2. So, cast your mind far back to the year 2001.
When Xboxes were the current console generation.
Exactly, yeah. Actually, no, it wasn't 2001, it was 2004 or 2003, I think, when this whole thing started. So, the one of the interesting things about an ARG is that it has seeds, I think they're sometimes called rabbit holes. The notion that you have a small piece of information that is readily accessible by some people or by a lot of people that starts people questioning and saying, why is this a thing? Why does it exist? Why am I, you know, being shown this? And then they take that and they start to explore it further. The I Love Bees campaign was very interesting because it sort of ran the story of an artificial intelligence, which I'm actually, it's been so long now, I can't remember. I don't remember if it was actually Cortana or if it was a different AI.
No, I think it was a different one.
It was a different one, yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea was this AI was sort of booting up and needed to gain more of itself to gain power, and the players were helping that.
But I think the reason why it's called I Love Bees is really interesting because it started off with, after one of the Halo trailers, it just had the ilovebees.com or something down the bottom under the Xbox symbol, and that was it. And then if you visited that website, it was just this really HTML sort of looking basic website about bees.
Very GeoCities.
Yeah, honey and recipes and things like that. But then there were bits of the page that were corrupted or something or weird, and then there was like a message from someone going, hey, I need some help fixing the webpage, can anyone help me, sort of thing. And that was what started the game.
Yeah. So the idea was that it was spread across lots of different corrupted web pages over the internet, which was very interesting.
So,
but what I loved about this one... I was going to say, I loved that part of the gameplay, they just dumped all this random information on the players, and the players figured out that they were GPS coordinates, and then they were all wondering what they had in common. And people were like, oh, well, can you go visit them and see what's there, take a photo, you know, sort of before Google Maps, I guess, was a huge, you know, Street View and all that was around. And they eventually figured out that there were payphones at all of the GPS points. And then they got some more information or figured out this other information was time and date stamps. And so they rocked up at the payphone at that particular date and time, and it rang, and they answered the phone to receive
so crazy
information. And yeah, like characters were sort of talking to them or saying a statement or giving them more information about the story, and they sort of had to piece together all the bits from all the different payphones around the world. I think majority were in the US, from my understanding.
That would make sense.
And that's just so interesting. that and like sounds like so spy, you know. Yeah. You have to go wait by the payphone for it to ring.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's no real surprise that a ARG that was run for the Halo fan base was such a big hit, because the Halo fan base is known throughout, you know, gaming world as being one of the most, if not the most rabid fan base in that kind of thing. I mean, these are the guys that, same game, Halo 2, when they shut down the multiplayer servers of Halo 2, there was actually like players, they realized that if they stayed in the game, they wouldn't, the servers wouldn't actually shut off.
They wouldn't close.
They wouldn't actually close. And so they actually stayed. One guy stayed for almost, I think, 2 months. He stayed connected to this one server so it wouldn't shut down. And the crazy thing is that the company that made Halo 2, I think it's 42 development or something like that, or 442 or something like that. Or I can't remember what their actual name is, but they actually put an Easter egg into one of their other Halos of, like, you know, a monument to the last 10 players that were still playing Halo 2, like, months later, months awesome. After they'd shut down the regular multiplayer servers. And there was just this holdout of these, you know, dozen or so players that just kept playing Halo 2 multiplayer. So it's not unexpected that a fan base like that would get so into this kind of lore and so into like a story like this, and you know, it was very cool. Like, and like Tim said, this is one of the very first ARGs that was ever run.
So pretty sure that was still Bungie back then.
Was it still Bungie?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
so.
And then they turned over to 343 Industries in like.
Oh no! Sorry, 2011. I was thinking the actual marketing campaign was made by
you're right. 42. It was 42. Sorry. Yeah,
42 Entertainment is the name of the ARG
My
company.
Bad.
Yeah. Jean McGonigal writes about some of that process in her book Reality is Broken, because she had a small part in running or something to do with community liaison in I Love Bees.
Oh right.
So that's quite interesting to read if you want to read more about it from like behind the curtain. I'm sure there's other books.
Outside of the gaming world, the other really big and very, very successful ARG that happened in the past decade was the Year Zero ARG, which was the promotion for the new Nine Inch Nails, or the new at the time, new Nine Inch Nails album, Year Zero. Now, hugely involved in this one, and I know that you were a little involved in it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the day that we sat down and listened to the album extremely loudly.
That was incredible. But, so this was the thing. So this ARG was very, very interesting in that Trent Reznor, the frontman for the Nine Inch Nails, was adamant that the game was actually the album. It's not just the marketing campaign. The album and the game together are the art form that is the album Year Zero. It's not just the music. So the ARG set up the story of the album, which was a huge concept album about an alternate reality where in the year 2022, something terrible happens to the United States and the government goes really totalitarian and starts, you know, drugging the populace, which, given recent events, doesn't sound too far from what's possible.
Not far off at the moment, yeah.
It's actually very, very scary in hindsight. So what was really cool was this game sort of went across, I mean, so many different mediums. And the seed for this one was something as simple as a tour t-shirt that had letters, slightly different shade of white to other letters, that spelt out the phrase, "I am trying to believe." Now, it didn't have the .com or anything. It just had the phrase, "I am trying to believe," spelled out in very, very subtle shades of white. But people realized that if they went to iamtryingtobelieve.com, it was the beginning of the ARG. Further to that, and again, this is something that hopefully wouldn't work in the modern sort of era, is they left thumb drives in bathroom stalls at one of their gigs, and people picked up the thumb drives and put it into the computers. Now, kids, you should never do this. This is a huge, huge security risk.
I think it would happen nowadays, actually, very sadly.
It absolutely would. Yeah. It absolutely would.
And you know, have you heard of a thing called dead drops? Where people hide the USB sticking out of like cement in brick walls and things like that. So
it absolutely does still happen. Yeah. But the point was that when you put this thumb drive on your computer, it had a file on there which was just corrupted, like white noise, essentially. It wasn't anything. But if you pass that through a spectrogram, it spat out an image of an IP address. And that is a seriously insane level to start the game on. And that really sort of set the pace for the rest of the game. There were some very, very tough logic puzzles that were in this thing. Very, very obtuse clues that one person on their own could never realistically get through.
And I mean, that's what Jane talks about in her book. She's saying the whole premise, I guess, of alternate reality games is that they rely on collective intelligence. So,
yeah.
It should be a good ARG is designed in such a way that no one person can ever do it on their own. And you have to have like this critical mass of a large group of people playing in order to solve it or to progress. And if it's not designed that way, then it's not quite so successful or good, I guess, as an ARG.
Yeah.
Because you're not having to liaise and work with other people.
You can kind of see that in the kind of challenges that they do design for these things, though, because usually, you know, they're either location-based. So, in the case of I Love Bees, you had, you know, these 20 or so payphones that people had to... Or, no, it was more than... It was way more than that, sorry. All these payphones that people had to go to at, you know, similar times or across the country kind of thing. Or it takes very specialist knowledge that, you know, only one in... You know, maybe 10,000 people would actually have to like run something through
or more. I mean, one in a million would be an acceptable number for some of these things.
Yeah, exactly. So designing these kind of games must be incredibly challenging because you can't just, you know, pass it through a cipher and that's done. Like it really does. You really need to think of statistically how many people are going to have the knowledge to access this information. Okay, well, how many people do I anticipate are actually going to play my game? Well, okay, well, then it's going to take... And then, obviously, it's also the time-based thing because you don't want an ARG to be over in a week. Like, you want an ARG to be something that goes for months, possibly even years. I mean, there are definitely ARGs that I've seen go over multiple years. There was one, probably the more recent ARG that people might know about in terms of games, was called Frog Fractions 2. It was the ARG for Frog Fractions 2. Now, if people don't know about Frog Fractions... It sounds like an educational game. That's because it kind of was taking that. It was a bizarre game. I don't know. Have you guys actually played or heard of Frog Fractions at all?
I have dabbled.
Okay, so Frog Fractions was a game that was made back in the days of like Flash games. So it was a Flash game originally, and it was made by just one guy. But it was just really crazy. It started out as ostensibly an educational game about learning fractions by controlling a frog and doing some random stuff. But eventually it ended up being this crazy multi-gameplay bizarre adventure where your player went to Mars and then did it. Like there was a text adventure that was hidden in there and there was all these different gameplay elements and it was just completely bonkers. And in the development of Frog Fractions 2, the guy who made Frog Fractions, I can't recall his name right now, I'm really sorry, he decided that he wanted to run an ARG. And they did run an ARG for about a year or so. And then they kind of were like winding it down because they were running out of time to kind of get all the actual game stuff done because they were making the game at the same time as this. And actually, they ended up having to make two games, but I'll get to that in a second. So they were winding down the first ARG, and then one of the people that had really like one of the girls who had done like a lot of work in the community solving the first ARG actually proposed to do a side ARG and to merge the two together into one massive ARG. So it actually took 2 years to solve, which then allowed the game. Once everyone had actually solved both of these ARGs and gotten the final like unlock, basically like solved them both, then they had to work out the fact that the game was actually hidden in a completely different game published by Adult Swim, which is like an American, you know, it's like Cartoon Network. It's actually a legit, you know, company. They had published this game, I think, 6 months earlier or something like that. It'd been sitting in Steam the whole time, and Frog Fractions 2 was actually hidden in that game, and players had to buy that game and then go to a certain spot in it to unlock Frog Fractions 2 and play through that. Now, unfortunately, from all reports, Frog Fractions 2 is not actually a very good game. but I would argue
the journey.
Yeah, I would argue that the journey was probably worth it. So these things can be long and complicated. So
absolutely,
designing for that must be a huge challenge.
And I think that's why so many of them are short or kept to smaller time frames to maintain the integrity. Because if you do have it going on forever, you know, I think you start losing players, and maybe it's not as fresh.
I think so.
So before we, because there's some really interesting applications as to how these ARGs can be incorporated in the solution of real world problems. But before we go into that, there's one other one that I really, really want to touch on, because this was another one that I got to, you know, be a part of. And to me, I think may have been one of the most difficult to pull off. And that was the ARG built around the release of Portal 2.
Yeah.
And the reason I say it was one of the hardest to pull off is that this ARG required content to be retroactively added to other people's video games on Steam. Yeah, and that's not right. Trivial. So the idea for this game was, it was called the Potato Sack. I think that's just what it was called, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And the idea was that, and at the time, no one understood why potato, but this turned out to be a reference to something that happens in the game Portal 2.
Yeah.
The notion was that you were helping the titular, not titular at all.
Titular. Maybe in your head.
Yeah, the enemy was called Portal. cut that bit out. So what you were actually doing was helping the antagonist in the Portal games, GLaDOS, the AI. You were helping her get back into power. And to do that, you had to find bits of AI core that were in other people's video games. Some of them were achievements that you had to unlock. Some of them were secret bits that you had to find. I know that there was a lot of really interesting stuff in games like Sanctum and some other big ones as well. So this required developers who had already finished a game and, you know, probably potentially weren't even supporting the game anymore through regular patching. These are games that were done and dusted, to go back into them and add things to them. And people had to figure out, oh, hey, that game just patched and I don't understand why. I'll jump into it and see if anything's different. That's a really interesting way of running an ARG. And this is one of the few ones that was almost entirely done online and through a gaming platform like Steam.
Well, they had a unique ability to do that, given that they were Valve and they owned Steam.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
It was also
kind of mischievous.
Yeah.
Because it meant that people were going to buy old games that Valve then gets a
you divvied up, and, you know, some people buy this one and some people buy that one. And
yeah. Or you already own
that
them.
Way.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it was a very, very interesting way of doing it, I thought.
Yeah.
So this all sort of comes, this is fun. This is interesting. There's another one I'd love to talk about, which was the ARG based around the movie Cloverfield, which I actually argue made the movie Cloverfield a completely different movie and a much better movie. But we don't really have time to go into every single one of these ARGs. So what I'd like to talk about quickly now is the note that in the last couple of years, we've started to see some serious ARGs come out. Now, these are alternate reality games that are taking the notion of, I guess it's called archaeological storytelling, the notion that you go back through content to piece together the story and figure out what was going on. It's actually starting to look at, rather than just being there for fun, it's actually teaching people about real concepts. So both of these examples were found by Phil.
Yay.
One of them is the World Without Oil.
I found that one too. Jeez.
Okay, so it was independently found by both of you. Well done.
Much like an ARG, we both found it.
Teamwork, yay.
Would you like to quickly go through that one?
Megan, go for it.
I think it was run over a short period of time, and it was looking at imagining a world with, I think this was one was run in the US, looking at a world without oil, and players were encouraged to create content themselves and contribute to the community to explain, so that to sort of pretend that the alternate reality story was really impacting their lives, and how are they going to change, or what were they going to do differently? And they really asked the players to contribute to the story, and they would, a good puppet master will then respond to what the players are generating or saying, and really tailor your ARG core story to respond to that. And so that's what they did. And they really, really got regular everyday people thinking about, actually, we're going to run out of oil. It's a finite resource.
Mm.
Actually, we've got to change a lot of what we do and how we work and how we use our resources to prepare for this, because this is a big thing that's going to happen. And it really got people thinking about this sort of issue. And, I mean, they haven't run it again, but they found that to them, it really achieved their goal of getting people thinking about this issue and perhaps changing behaviours. But yeah, I don't know, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main difference between this and maybe some of the other ones that we've talked about is the fact that it wasn't really based around, you know, solving puzzles or anything. It was more giving that reactive kind of immersion through, you know, the players.
It was a story more than go do this challenge or solve this puzzle to get the next bit of the story. It was,
It must have been very, I don't know, I guess rewarding for the people that were running it to actually see people really diving in, you know, taking that teenag, this is not a game thing, like very, very seriously and actually coming up with, you know, different solutions, different proposals, like, you know, actually imagining what it would be like. It must have been very rewarding for them on their side to actually see all this stuff come through. And for the people that are playing it, obviously, you know, this isn't something like as, you know, as an adult that we usually get to do, like unless we are people that play D&D and people that play, you know, those kind of tabletop games, you don't usually get a lot of opportunity to imagine things and to problem solve or to, I guess, invest in, you know, in an imagined reality like that. And so I think it probably would have been, I don't know, probably one of the first times that these people had done that for quite some time. You know, it's, I think that's probably what lends ARGs a lot of their power, is the fact that, you know, in our day-to-day life, you don't sit there and, you know, spend an hour or two inhabiting, you know, the idea and the imaginative world of, okay, well, what would happen if I was me, but in a world without oil? Like, how would I get to work? Like, where would my work be? How would I, you know, keep the lights on? Like, it's such a, even just thinking about it for, you know, 5 minutes every day would have changed some people's perspectives on things. So,
I also read about a lot of universities using like very short, simpler sort of ARGs on campus for a week, but a bit longer. Maybe it was for the first half of first semester to get new students familiar with campus, working together, making friends. And you've seen, I can't remember what it's called, but there is like another sort of game that's kind of a bit ARG, not really. It's like more like just a LARPing almost, like with the zombies game where some people, and you have Nerf guns and you shoot each other.
Oh,
have you
heard of that one? Yeah.
Like, so on campus, they'll have a set time period. Maybe it's 1 week. And a few people start off as zombies. And if you touch, another person who's a player, and I think they wear like lanyards or something to show who's a player and who's a zombie. They then turn into a zombie, and you've got to try and, the zombies are trying to get everyone to turn into zombies by the end of the week. And the players are trying to survive and stay as a player, not as a human, not a zombie. And the players can have Nerf guns, and if they shoot a zombie, I think the zombie has to freeze in place for a minute or something, you know, a few seconds or something. So it's not really an ARG, but it's kind of universities. Yeah. Some campuses are using these sorts of things and tools to engage people in a more serious purpose, but trying to make it fun and interesting instead of the, here is the toilets, here is the restaurants, here is your fellow classmate.
You will be friends, now be friends.
So there's the other one that we sort of found was another sort of a strange one called Traces of Hope. Now, this one was sort of, I don't know if it was fully sponsored by or if it was just associated with the British Red Cross. And the notion was that you had to help a refugee reunite with an aid working organization and potentially his family as well. But I'm almost loath to call this one an ARG, even though it's sort of been accepted by, you know, the general consensus that it is.
Yeah, it was more, because, I don't know, because it was only one real storyline, and it was kind of more just, I don't know, it was way more puzzle solving than anything else, I think.
You all interact with the one character.
Yeah.
Almost independently. So,
rather than working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's almost as if it's just a suspension of disbelief game.
It's a single player
or a mixed media sort of game. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing that sort of provoked a thought in my mind about this one is that when we start to look at serious ARGs, and I fully support them as a medium, I think they're really interesting, but we do run the risk of just veering into the news.
Yeah,
because when you talk about real concepts like this, I mean, we're talking about situations that very, very real people are, you know, experiencing right now in the real world. And I almost wonder if it's a little bit belittling to have that turned into a game experience for someone's entertainment, even if it is for the ultimate goal of making, you know, more educated society.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in our, you know, kind of modern society where the news cycle is so, kind of complete and unending, and, you know, you can measure how long a story stays at the top of the headlines in hours just about, you know, something like this where you are spending time empathizing, you know, even if it is not necessarily an ARG, I think, you know, yeah, you can take the approach that, you know, maybe it's a little belittling to the concept, but isn't it more belittling for it just to not get any coverage or get like 5 minutes of coverage at the end of a news program? I don't know.
Maybe it's more of an experience than a game per se. You know, you're experiencing a story through different mediums that sort of exposes you to this issue rather than playing a game where there's like a win-lose state, or, you know, you're having fun and, yeah, belittling the issue. That's why the serious games or serious ARGs, it's really interesting sort of crossover, because you're using this engaging medium to get across a serious message. So it's as to whether it's still a game or not, you know, or whether you're still playing.
Yeah. I think definitely the people that make these kind of things would certainly have to tread lightly. Like you can't have, you know, a story like Traces of Hope where you're trying to find, you know, get a refugee to find his mother and, you know, an aid worker. You can't have that be like, you know, have screen shake and high scores and stuff like that. Like, you can't do that, obviously. But
And the other thing is, it'd be nice if at the end of it there was some real way for you to, or through it there was some real way for you to make change.
Even if
it's just donating, encouraging people to donate, or I don't know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, changing it of behaviours and mentalities would be a fantastic thing in that respect.
And that, I mean, that's what World Without Oil was for. They just wanted to change behaviour. They didn't want to...
Absolutely. But see, the other thing is that with World Without Oil, you know that it's a game.
Yes.
But you're accepting it. You're suspending disbelief.
But also, it's not so hard to go, actually, this could actually happen, you know.
Oh, absolutely. But with the ones about, like, for example, refugees and war situations... Yeah. You could mistake that for actual news. I mean, these actually run the risk of starting a hype or a mass panic about a real thing. I mean, and then does it fall into the category of fake news? Like, at what point do we run the risk of...
It's really happening to someone. Just, you know, you've made a narrative about a fictional someone to highlight those real issues. But you're right. Yeah, someone could.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm just for the record, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do this. We shouldn't explore it. I just like to sort of poke the question and sort of see, you know, there is a certain element of ethics that comes into these types of games that other games don't have to really worry with.
I think you'd want to definitely prototype it with a really small audience first, just to make sure a few things run the way you want them to, and before going public.
Interestingly, I think where you said that some games don't have to worry about it, I think they should be worrying about it, but they just don't. Like there are definitely
probably true as well.
Yeah, there's AAA games that could probably do with easing off the trigger finger like just a little bit, but they ain't ever gonna. So yeah, I like that there are, you know, these alternatives, or at least, you know, I mean, it was a little bit depressing actually, like looking up serious ARGs and seeing that while there were a few out there, there certainly hasn't been a lot.
And they're generally pretty small, smaller scale, much smaller audience, and much smaller time frame than the other bigger ones.
Which is kind of to be expected, obviously. People don't necessarily like coming home from work after working hard and sitting down and inhabiting the life of a scared, lonely refugee. Like, that's not necessarily something that you would, you know, we don't want to guilt anyone into feeling
that's
bad.
That's not everyone's fantasy.
Yeah. No, probably no one's fantasy. But at least they kind of are out there. And I think as a medium, I mean, I can't think of too many more, you know, other than just games, I can't think of too many more media that would be as good as an ARG when played correctly and with a lot of people to, you know, encourage empathy and reconsideration of a particular topic. I think
I've been a part of, the communities have generally been really, really positive, and everyone's sort of like working towards the same goal. So it's a really awesome community to feel a part of.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes in discussion forums and, you know, online, you can get a lot of negativity that didn't really seem to come through in the ARGs that I've been a part of, which I quite liked.
Mm. Yeah, that's a rare thing on the internet.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of lurkers who don't contribute or say much, but just follow the ARG as well, which is fine.
Which is what I tend to do as well. I mean, I've taken part in a couple, but not in any meaningful way. I've more just enjoyed watching it unfold and seeing the ingenuity of some people and being there for the exciting moments where it's like, oh, these are actually, you know, coordinates, or oh, I've solved this particular you know, encryption or whatever. It's a huge moment in the community. Like, there's a lot of backslapping and high fives.
Yeah,
it's like being in NASA control room when rocket launches.
Which, nice full circle, brings my mind back to that day sitting in your living room listening to the Year Zero album, where we reached the end of the ARG, the album was released, and you and I sat there and listened to it, and then when we pulled the CD out of the drawer, do you remember what happened?
Wait, I know this. I'm trying to remember. No.
Plumbing the depths of memory.
Yeah, man, okay.
So, the album was heat reactive.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes.
And there was another IP address embedded underneath the first surface layer of the album's disc. So, the disc itself, when you pulled it out of the drive, had changed color and revealed a new IP address.
That's right.
Which started, like, I guess what you would call the phase two of the game.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was the biggest oh snap moment
in my life.
Yeah,
that is the mark of an incredible ARG.
Yeah.
So I think that really sums it up. I mean, we could talk about this for so long because it is such an incredibly interesting topic, and I would love to see where this is going to go in the future.
I think quickly, very, very... two more before we go. So last year, Blizzard had a quick ARG to sort of announce or reveal their new hacker character Sombra, which a lot of fans were part of, and the other one that's, if you want to play, you can still play, and it's kind of our ARG, is Ingress, which is a company that Niantic, who also make Pokemon Go, Ingress was their first game. It's a big game essentially, and you sort of run around the world and you're part of one of two teams and you capture like real life points, but it's almost a crossover between augmented and alternate reality, but they have worldwide events where your scores and what you do contribute and change the storyline, and they post YouTube updates with the story and what's going on, and it's been going for a few years now. And it's, if you haven't played it, it's well worth playing for a few months. Get in touch with your local community. You catch up with random strangers and walk around parks in the middle of the night and capture points and things, and it's really fun.
Get questioned by the police.
Yes. But no, I played it for maybe a year or so, and met up with random people in my town, and it was really, really fun. I had lots of fun.
Yeah, I've been playing Ingress for 4 years now.
If you want to get a feel for a really accessible sort of ARG, Ingress is a good place to start. You don't need to know anything about code breaking or anything crazy. And the game teaches you how to play, and it's really fun. It's more strategic and involved than Pokemon Go. It's if you're kind of over Pokemon, it's a really good one to give it a go.
And like you said, Ingress does sort of straddle that line between alternate reality games and augmented reality games, which is an entirely different topic, one that you'll have to wait for in Season 2. So with that, I think we've really given this a good burl, as the Australian strime would say. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the web at pressx2.science and on Facebook as facebook.com/pressx2science. We would really appreciate it if you could share the podcast through social media or word of mouth and rate us up on iTunes with 5 stars if you enjoy the podcast, and we hope you do. Also, feel free to send us in any questions, comments, or feedback to questions@pressx2.science, and we are more than happy to get you guys engaged in the podcast in the future. So, from the three of us, we'll talk to you soon.